Welcome to Mom Enough.
With your co-hosts, developmental psychologist Dr. Marty Erickson and Aaron Erickson, maternal child health specialist. Content copyrighted by Marty and Aaron Erickson, all rights reserved.
Welcome to Mom Enough. We're glad you tuned in today. I'm Marty Erickson here with my daughter, Erin, and we are excited to welcome to today's show John Hope Bryant, who is going to be talking about a topic that's really different from a lot of the topics we address. He's going to be talking with us about how you can raise a young entrepreneur. And I know we all read in the papers and hear on the news about how important it is for people today, whether they're working independently, as we sometimes think of entrepreneurs, or if they're working in corporations or other kinds of organizations and institutions, how important it is for them to have that entrepreneurial spirit and the skills that go along with it. So I'm excited to hear what our guest has to say about that. John Hope Bryant is a presidential appointee on the Financial Advisory for Youth. He's the founder, chair, and CEO of Operation Hope, a nonprofit banker for the working poor and struggling middle class. In 2013, John's organization launched Business in a Box Academies, a pilot program to teach middle and high school students in poor neighborhoods how to realize the American dream through entrepreneurship. It's a kind of shark tank for kids, if you will. As a result, dozens of successful small businesses were launched by children, from a bakery in Oakland to a PC repair shop in Denver. So really, great outcomes from this important work with children in poor neighborhoods. But I think these concepts really apply to all of us as we think about how we can prepare our children for succeeding in today's world. Welcome, John.
Honored to be with you, and thanks for doing this, both of you.
Well, happy to have you here.
Well, it's fantastic. John, I have a son who is constantly coming up with ideas and very creative, and he has all these inventions he wants to make. And I see the importance of having those entrepreneurial skills to take those ideas and run with them and to bring them to fruition. And so I'd like you to just talk a little bit about your approach, your six ways to raise and nurture a young entrepreneur. Can you go over that?
Yeah, well, it basically comes from my background growing up in Compton, California, in South Central Los Angeles, in a so-called poor neighborhood, and with a mother and father who were as wealthy as you could imagine, but not necessarily in ways that your audience would think. In other words, it wasn't financial. And I think that that approach that my mom and dad took is as relevant to a so-called poor neighborhood in Compton, California, as it is to families in the suburbs in Denver or Minneapolis or any place else in this country. And they really unleashed my true potential, recognizing, and this is what Operation Hope does, is sort of reintroducing people back to themselves. You know, kids are born perfect, and they're born with optimism and joy. And then we beat all that out of them. The world beats it out of them, beats their optimism out of them, their joy, their self-confidence, their belief. So the first thing we had to do is just really was to reimagine and redefine poverty itself. And so we redefined poverty. It's called the Hope Doctrine on Poverty, and this is in the book How the Poor Can Save Capitalism. It's half confidence and self-esteem and belief in yourself. If you don't believe in yourself, you're toast. If you don't have somebody as a young person who pours into you self-esteem. My mother told me she loved me every day of my life. There's nothing more important than a child being told that they're loved.
Amen to that.
And then the second part of poverty, and of course you flip this as well, the second part of poverty is crappy role models and a crappy environment. So kids grow up wanting to be rap stars, athletes, and drug dealers, often in urban and underserved communities, and frankly, even in what poor white rural communities. Not because they're dumb or they're stupid. The kids are actually brilliant. They're modeling what they see. And we should not be surprised to grow up, the kids grow up wanting to be what they see. It is a very natural occurrence. And then the second part of that, as I mentioned, is environment. You hang around 9 broke people, you'll be the 10th. And the last part of poverty is aspiration and opportunity. Aspiration is a code word for hope. The most dangerous person in the world is a person with no hope. What happened in Ferguson, Missouri with young people, what's happening in places all across this country with young people, is more of an indication of the death of hope than anything else. And, of course, that then leads to a dropout rate of 30 to 70% in this country because kids are dropping out of high school mentally in middle school and physically in high school. So 30% of all mainstream kids, middle-class kids, all kids are dropping out of high school. So it's not just a minority thing. But then the numbers, once you get to low-wealth areas, just go through the roof. But it's because they don't see any opportunities. They're saying, why go to school? What's the point?
Right.
I'm not connecting education with aspiration. So one of the things that we do with Hope Business and Box Academies is reconnect education powerfully to aspiration. And that's really just modeling my childhood experience that I mentioned to you in passant earlier.
So get concrete here with me. I just love the, concept of this. And I want to, kind of talk about where the rubber meets the road with this. And you
sure.
Talk your 6 ways to raise and nurture a young entrepreneur. You talk about things like showing children how money grows, supporting their natural entrepreneurship, teaching them about how credit works and all these basic things about money. And I know I grew up in a very poor family, particularly early in my childhood, and my dad dropped out of school at the end of 9th grade. So I know what you're talking about. I was in a more rural, small town kind of environment in my early years in Iowa. And I think, very similar in many ways, that loss of hope and, not really having a sense of how education was relevant to the life you were going to live. So I really resonate on a personal level as somebody who's kind of been the first in my family to go on and get an education and keep getting an education, going on to grad school and so on. But when you're thinking about kids today, how do you do some of these very basic things? Talk about what you would do and how, with the kids themselves, but also how you would support parents in raising their kids to have these very important skills along with the hope and the aspirations.
Well, I think the first thing you got to do is actually talk about it. I mean, I don't mean to be to sound sarcastic or
no, not at all.
But no. People aren't. We this is assuming that we're talking to kids. Our kids versus talking at our kids versus talking to our kids versus talking with our kids. For instance, I wonder if those observing your program, listening to your program, whether they actually have a weekly or a monthly family meeting where they sit down with their kids and say, look, these lights don't come on by themselves. this toothbrush, this toothpaste don't just show up in your house. I went to the grocery store and paid for it. The heat here in places where it's cold during the winter, that doesn't just happen. The food in the refrigerator, first of all, the refrigerator.
Yeah, it didn't just walk in the door by itself.
John, this is so funny that you're saying this because just the other day we were driving to a holiday, a little pageant at this little community church, and we were in the car and the kids were complaining about, nudging each other and they're too close. There's not enough room in it's a small sedan with 3 kids in the back seat. And they said, I said to them, if we lived in India right now, we'd all be in a tuk-tuk and you'd be sitting on each other's laps. I said, the rest of the world does not have a car, let alone 2 cars for one family. The rest of the world does not have their own bedrooms. You guys have to shift your thinking a little bit here because the reality that you experience is not the reality that the rest of the world is necessarily experiencing. And so it's really important to be aware of that. It's just funny how I mean, you're talking about this and I'm like, yes, we got to tell our kids because they need to know that, you know, that like you said, you go and brush your teeth and then you lose your toothbrush and I have to buy another one. Where does that money come from?
That's right.
And we Everything. Do, just so you know, John, we encourage family meetings. We've talked about that on many of our shows. And I think what you're adding to that is this conversation about money. I mean, we see value in family meetings for addressing all kinds of issues. But certainly bringing money into that, I think, is a really powerful starting point. So keep telling us some more.
Yeah, so we just need to have really frank conversations with our kids. Let them know, as they said, what my mother told me growing up, money don't grow on trees. And we are spoiled. We do have a entitlement generation. And when people hear about entitlements, they often think about poor people, black and brown people. No. I'm more concerned about my wealthy, upper middle class friends' children.
Oh, amen to that.
Than I am about anything else. I grew up in Cobham, California, in South Central LA. I had my first business when I was 10 years old. The neighborhood candy house. I'll tell you about that story if you want to. I was homeless when I was 18 years old. I take no for vitamins. My resiliency is through the roof. I never give up. People shouldn't feel sorry for me. I'm built for both managing failure and achieving success because I just never give up. Feel sorry for those wealthy, well-to-do families where they don't allow their children to fail. They don't allow them to slip and fall. They protect them at every corner. They don't share with them that the vacation house, when I see kids in first class, it drives me crazy on the plane. you got a family, mother, father, each one of the kids have their own first class seat. I'd be putting three kids in one seat and putting a seatbelt on them. I mean, I'm joking, but I mean, the point is, that's a $3,000, $4,000, $8,000 seat.
Yeah.
Money does not. Where does a kid go from there? I mean, where does a kid's expectations? How do you ask them to go work at an $8, $10 an hour job when you just gave them an $8,000 8-hour plane ride?
Yeah.
I just think that we've got to give our kids some values and some virtues to go along with all the guilt that we're feeling about how we grew up hard and we don't want them to struggle, which is completely ridiculous to me. If you're succeeding in life, why wouldn't you give your kids the same discipline experience that you had when you were growing up? And they, by the way, you're not your kid's best friend. You're their parent. And it's better they respect you and learn to like you than like you and never respect you. So
yeah.
I think that this conversation, a very candid conversation about life and about what it takes to run a household, which is very expensive, is extremely important. Number one cause of divorce is money. Number one.
Mm-hmm.
And so the kids need to, and then they'll appreciate. I mean, okay, education's free. No, education's not free. Everybody pays taxes,
right?
So that you can go to school for free. As your daughter mentioned, you pay for education in most countries. You literally write a check or not a check. You pay cash so your kid can go to school.
Or you trade a child for another child to be able to go to school. I mean, it does get that severe. Not that I'm going to necessarily tell my kids that right now, but I mean, I think there is that concept
of... Call me, I'll tell them.
Yeah. Well, I think there is that concept of, and we talk about this on our program all the time, of mom enough, mom too little, like not engaged enough, not talking about the issues, not being there for your children, and then mom too much. And that's the mom who's doing too many things for her kids, the mom who's driving the homework to the school when the kid forgets it, driving the lunch to the school. And I think, you know, it's obviously comes from a loving, well-meaning place, but it's very misguided because in the end, you're doing things for your kids that they should be learning to do for themselves. And if they don't do it, they need the natural consequence of, wow, guess what happens? You miss Friday fun day if you don't bring your homework to school. And that's not my problem. That's your problem.
Well, and contributing to the household work, to the well-being and to the community good within the household, I think. You know, you talk about that sense of entitlement. And that's I'm on the soapbox about that all the time because I think we've done a whole generation of kids a huge disservice in exactly the way you're talking about, John, by not expecting them to contribute and not helping them understand that, you know, things don't just land in their laps. That's not the way life's going to be.
And you know, and while we're, you know, so as a result of that, we have a generation of kids here, and I'll say also in Europe, who believe in, you know, this theory, in late, long lunch, leave early. And by the way, let's go party. While Africa is getting up early and staying up late. China's getting up early and staying up late. Asia is getting up early and staying up late. They're obsessed with education. Obsessed.
Yeah.
They're working on weekends. They're going to school on weekends. They want what we have here in America, and we take it for granted. And so we have got to get our hustle back. And so when I talk about, you know, youth entrepreneurship, I'm not talking about we are the world, we are the future, isn't this sweet, oh, nice school project. No, 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 no. I'm talking about, as Jim Clifton of Gallup CEO on my board, who's written a great book called The Coming Jobs War, which in my book, How the Poor Can Save Capitalism, is sort of a companion to that. He says, look, we're at war. It's a jobs war. It's global. And whoever's got more GDP wins. And you've never had a global leader that wasn't an economic leader. It has never existed because you got to pay for your military. You got to pay for your philanthropy. You got to pay for your embassies around the world. What's the key to this? Fourth graders through 12th graders, 30 million kids in America is the bench strength for the playoff games of the rest of our lives.
Hmm.
And what's happening with those fourth graders to 12th graders? Here's what's happening. If you want to know what kid's going to be an astronaut or an engineer, you can figure that out. It's called grades. Left brain analytics. It's called grades. Right. You want to find out who the cellist is going to be, the next recording artist, the next professional athlete. You can figure that out. We have a system for that in most schools in middle school that farm clubs you all the way through middle school, sometimes in elementary. And we can tell you, you know, in middle school, high school, who that NFL player is going to be. And they get farm clubbed and cultivated. You want to find out in Canada who's going to be in the National Hockey League. They'll tell you in elementary school. You tell me who the job creator is going to be, who the entrepreneurs are going to be.
Yeah.
The folks who run small businesses like yours, the folks who drive the economy, who create jobs, or who can go get a job or work in a job because they've got the right job skills. We have no system for that. We wing it.
Well, so let's give our parents who are listening something concrete that they can follow up with. Let's picture that we're sitting around the kitchen table. We're having our family meeting. Maybe we have an 8-year-old and a 10-year-old, like my daughter here does. And you talk in your tips about teaching young children about investing in credit, and you also talk about the basic things like getting them to save rather than spend and creating a budget. What would be some concrete things you would do with an 8-year-old and a 10-year-old, just as an example, or you would encourage parents to do it?
I mean, we've got plenty of content at OperationHope.org, my nonprofit, for, you know, what I call tactical conversations. So I'm not going to waste valuable time on your program telling you, you know, graph 46. Let me tell you what I do that I think is transformational. I take each one of my kids, and I would either order through Operation Hope or organize on your own what I call a Hope Business and Box Academy experience at their public school or whatever school they go to. This is where a kid gets a course. First of all, go to your school and demand that they put a financial literacy course there. Demand it.
Mm-hmm.
Demand it. And they will, by the way. But the parents have to demand it because we have an entire generation of kids growing up who don't understand the language of money, financial literacy. And then, by the way, contact us. We'll help them. We'll give them free content. They can download financial literacy programming for us for free on our website. So Hope Business Box Academy, fourth grade kids, a course in financial literacy, a course in dignity, values, a course in entrepreneurship, 25 businesses you can start for $500 or less. Kid picks
great.
A business. Yeah, kid picks a business idea.
And
oftentimes
say,
go ahead.
Well, say the name of the website again, and we link to it from our website, but
sure.
Just say it so people can.
OperationHope.org.
Mm-hmm. Okay, OperationHope.org, and all these concrete things you can share with your kids' schools and you use in some ways perhaps at home.
Yeah, and they can also just search on the internet, Banking on Our Future, and that will bring up content regarding our financial literacy work at Operation Hope.
Great.
So backed up at Hope Business Box Academy, course in financial literacy, course in dignity, course in entrepreneurship, 25 business ideas that a kid can start for $500 or less. Kid picks a business idea. Often they modify it, by the way. So we give them a baseline idea. 9 times out of 10, the kids will modify that to make it their own. Then we do a pitch event in the kids' auditorium. Think Shark Tank for kids. Per school, kid goes on stage, there's a timer there. There's local judges. So the parents here, many of which are professionals, can also double as judges. Gets them involved with their school and their kids, by the way. The kids pitch their idea, go. 2 minutes, timer, because life is short. They do a good pitch, we fund the business up to $500.
Oh, that's great.
We open a bank account for the kid. So now the kid has an experience of going into a bank or credit union and getting banked like I did with my Passbook account as a kid, maybe like you did as well. And then we assign a business role model for the kid. And then Gallup measures the kids both their strengths on the front end through strength finders, both strength finders or entrepreneurship strength finders, and the outcomes on the back end through what we call the Gallup Hope Index. So you can actually measure what success and failure looks like per school. And we're able to do this, the full program, because Gallup's donation to us of the technology for $10,000 per school per year. We do two pitch events per school per year, which is unbelievable. But I'll give them the content that I talked to you about here for free.
That's terrific.
So this is something that every school, if it's a school with some resources or some parents with some resources, we're going to put in 2,000 Hope Business in the Box academies across this country, most of them in challenged neighborhoods and challenged schools. But middle, you know, I'm sure that suburban moms listening to this going, wow, that would work for my school. We'll do it wherever we're requested. But if they don't want to do all that or they don't have the $10,000 per school per year, fine. We'll do it for free. We'll give them all of the pieces that I just described off of OperationHope.org at no charge whatsoever. We're a software company, a nonprofit software company for the development of human potential. And we want to pick up what Dr. King left off in sparking a movement that empowers the next generation with hope and opportunity. But you can't do that without young people.
Well, so since our audience, obviously, we have a lot of educators and our program goes out to people throughout the country and definitely within the metro area here. And it's used in a variety of neighborhoods from facing all sorts of barriers to learning and barriers to access to whatever, entrepreneurship opportunities and things like that. So we serve a very broad audience with our program. And so that's very helpful. And so I'm thinking, you know, taking that then from the school setting and parents, you know, encouraging their schools to do this, what can I as a mom do when I'm sitting down at the dinner table with my kids tonight? How can I, you know, help my kids figure out the importance of, I mean, obviously we've talked about this a lot because we do have family meetings and we use the share, save, spend, and we talk about these things, but what are some things that I could do when I'm sitting there with my kids to support them and giving them a sense of financial dignity and to, you know, create a budget and things like that?
Yeah. You're not going to get the kid to create a budget. If you want to put a kid to sleep, give them a traditional financial literacy course. You're gonna get the kid's attention by talking about their dreams, their aspirations. Find out the thing that they're most excited about, and tie that back to money.
Okay.
Are they excited about their iPad, their iPhone? Their Droid device. Are they excited about gaming? What are they excited about? Roll that back into an economic conversation. Turn that into a career and say, you know, do they like candy? I mean, as I grew up, I loved candy. So I started a candy store. But the way that worked was, and it had to be encouraged by my mother, otherwise I wouldn't have done it, is I said, Mom, the liquor store is selling the wrong kind of candy. Unfortunately, my neighborhood liquor store sold candy. And she said, well, that's, you know, what do you think about that? I said, well, I think he's wrong, and he's selling the wrong kind of candy. I'm a little boy. I know what kind of candy that should be sold. She said, well, go up and talk to him. So I went up and talked to Mr. Mack, Mack's Liquor Store. First time my mother went with me. The second time I went by myself. I said, sir, you're selling the wrong kind of candy. He said, I got a college degree, little boy. Go away. I said, that's nice. I've got cavities. I'm telling you, you're selling the wrong kind of candy. And I just kept bugging him. And he finally said, look, how do I get you out of my hair? I said, hire me. He said, fine, go work at the counter. I said, I don't want to work at the counter. I want to work in the back. He said, that's the worst job I have. I said, that's the one I want. All this, by the way, inspired by my mother, who gave me confidence. My dad, who owned his own business for 54 years, with my mother is the one who just kept encouraging me and pushing me, making this a real-life experience. So I went, and she encouraged me to get a part-time job. So I went to go work for him, and I worked there for 3 weeks and quit.
<'Cause I wasn't laughs> and started your own.
There you go. All I was doing was doing market research. That was it. And I wanted to go in the back and work in the box in the box boy area to confirm my thesis that he was selling the wrong kind of candy.
And when I saw that
when I saw that his stuff wasn't moving, and the stuff that I was saying, you know, wasn't even on the menu, and I figured out where he bought his candy because it was on the side of the box, I quit and went home and borrowed $40 from my mother. And she said, "It's a loan. It's not a gift. Because life is tough. You got to pay stuff back. The bank wants you to pay it back. You got to pay me back." And then she took me to Iris Food Store. Why Iris Food Store? Because that's where the guy bought his candy. It was on the side of the box. And she explained to the guy that this was was not a school project. This was a real business. And they gave me free racks to take with. They were so inspired. Kids can get away with anything. I mean, people just love kids. And the owners of this place were so inspired that I was doing this. They said, what else can we do? What else do you need? You know? And then I went home, ate through half the inventory. I hate, you know, some candy to this day. I had a bunch of cavities. But I sold the other half and made $300 a week.
Wow. Okay, well, there's the concrete tip we're looking for. Tell your kids this story and let them come up with their own.
And I put the liquor store out of the candy business, by the way.
Well, that's probably a good thing.
Yeah, I'd say. Well, John, we're out of time here, unfortunately, but I really love your spirit. And I think that this message about parents really being activists and making sure that their kids' schools are taking advantage of these terrific resources that your organization can offer and teaching children financial literacy, that's so critical, and all that goes with it, the hope, the aspirations, the dignity, and the basic understanding of how the financial world works. And if we could do that, we'd really really see great things in the future. I won't say if we could, I'll say when we do, we will see great things in the future. So thank you so much for bringing a message of hope. Is it a coincidence that your middle name is Hope? Is that for real?
It is legally my name.
Okay. Well, it's a great one. Thanks, John Hope Bryant, for being with us. And we thank all of you for tuning in to Mom Enough. We hope you'll be back with us again next week when we'll have another new show.
If you have concerns about your child's growth and development, please talk to your child's health care provider or call 1-866-693-GROW. That's 1-866-693-4769 to talk to a professional and find out ways in which you can get connected to various resources in Minnesota.
Do you think I'll have a show called Kid Enough someday?